by Sacramento. KRXQ HD2 Sacramento. ESPN 1320. Sacramento's sports leader. Always live on the Odyssey app. It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Welcome into the Insiders. I am James Hamm. We are, of course, brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Joining me today, Jesse Tapia over there. Hi, Jesse.
In the building again. Been having fun this week, hanging out with you guys, you and Joe.
It's nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
A change of pace for you.
Yeah.
Get you a little more exposure. The hoodie's back today.
It is back today, yeah.
Okay. And I like that you do the earphones over the hoodie.
It's just comfortable, you know?
It's a smart move.
And to be honest, like, the earphones, well, because, like, when I first got here and I was working here and all that, like, we had to share headphones and stuff because, like, ESPN 1320 wasn't the
got
richest.
It.
Didn't have all that money, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm not going to throw somebody else's ear sweat on my ear. So let me throw the hoodie on.
Got it.
And we'll cover it as well. It's like a comfortability thing as well, because I have the hoodie on when I'm at the grocery store anywhere. Like, it's just, it's comfortable as well.
Got it.
Kind of,
yeah.
Like introvert thing. But yeah, like, no, I don't like, I just, even mine, like, I don't want to touch my ear.
So I bought Kyle his earphones that are over there as a gift because I thought they looked like Kyle.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they've got like the root beer brown, like interior lining, and like they're white. But I don't like wearing earphones. I don't like having like totally boxed in.
They're comfortable. I like how they sound too, like just the quality and all that stuff.
Okay.
We're always editing like Joe knows and all that stuff. But yeah.
All right.
I got the same pair as him and I agree. Like, yeah these are comfortable. And I like to do it with the beanie sometimes. So I get what you're saying because I throw the beanie on and then I put it on.
It just feels weird because it's like, what if I turn into like a UFC fighter and I got cauliflower ear because it's like the ear sweat from this or whatever.
Oh.
That's not going to happen, but it's like.
That's a weird thought.
It's disgusting. I just don't want my ears to be gross.
I'm going to wait for Jesse to come in wearing wrestling.
I'm a podcaster with cauliflower ear.
Don't mess with that guy. Yeah,
wrestling like a headgear for wrestling.
Like, I'm okay.
That'd be amazing.
I'm not even gonna walk down that road. Don't even step on it. So yeah, we're just gonna stay clean.
Okay, things got weird here. I apologize. We are the Insiders.
I don't apologize, by the way.
It's Jesse Tapia over here. We got Joe Brazil behind the glass. We are, of course, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320, 98.5 HD2. You can find us on YouTube.com/ESPN1320, Twitch, anywhere else that you can possibly watch, listen, and Twitter, all that stuff. So thanks for tuning in. Thanks for joining us. We got to watch the Oklahoma City Thunder punch their ticket to the finals last night.
Yeah, we saw that one coming, huh? I mean, we both called at the end of the show yesterday. I think I said 15-plus Thunder would win. You kind of agreed.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it would be a better competition early on, but
the Thunder had that punch that you expected the Timberwolves to come out with.
Yeah, yeah. And to watch a team that's up against it, that's fighting for their lives, lose the first quarter 26-9.
Yeah, it was over after that.
It's just like
it's just a matter of how much you wanted to watch the rest of the game before you turned it off.
Yeah, I really didn't want to watch the rest of the game. You lose the first quarter 26-9. You lose the second quarter 39-23. And you go down 65-32 at half. I don't think I've seen a drubbing like that. And, you know, like, look, I think there's something about this Oklahoma City team. Like I told Kyle last week, they feel like Thanos. Like, they're inevitable.
Yeah, it's just kind of like there's no real just weakness to them right now. They're one of the best defensive teams, and they're one of the best offensive teams. They got the MVP, and you just got, whether it be the second role player on the, like Jalen Williams or Chet or whoever, it's just, everyone is just perfect for this team.
That's what I feel like. Very rarely do you see a team that's so well assembled.
Mm-hmm. Maybe Alex Caruso and Hartenstein were the last Infinity Stones that they needed to add.
Exactly. So I think, first of all, Sam Presti is an incredible general manager. This is the third time he's built a big time winner. He has not won a chip. But when you're a general manager that, you know, again, with Seattle, with OKC, in a small market like Oklahoma that can deliver three MVPs, that can mine the NBA for three MVPs, that's incredible. Like, and I think Shea's just in the beginning stages of winning a bunch.
Yeah, it's the blueprint. I mean, he didn't draft Shea or anything like that, but you drafted Chet Williams and all those guys, and it makes it a lot easier to bring in one guy like Shea to kind of round it all out or start with it.
Yeah, well, that, and when they got Shea, they traded Paul George to get him, and not only did Shea, you know, get traded to OKC, but it included a whole ton of first-round picks, one of which they used to select Jalen Williams. So, like, look, I don't know how teams can repeat what's happened here in OKC, because the problem is that even if you decide to start today, you're the Sacramento Kings, you're like, let's throw it all away, let's dump everybody we can, let's trade Sabonis, let's trade Zach LaVine, let's trade DeMar DeRozan, let's start at the beginning. Even if you did that, the problem is that you don't have Sam Presti on your side.
Yeah, would you like to hope maybe there's a couple Sam Prestis out there and he's not the only great GM that could fix something?
Well, it's not just about being able to fix something. It's about being able to acquire assets in a different way than most people do.
Yeah.
And just think about the game in a different way and bring in as many players, young players, first-round picks as you can. Sort through them. Don't stick on anybody too long that's not going to make it. If they're not developing the right way, you move forward. You know, it's one of those things where, like, it takes a there's a certain brutality to the way that he's a general manager, and it's cutthroat. It's like, hey, Josh Giddey, we like you. You're top, what, six pick. We think you're a good ball player, but you're not good enough for what we're doing. You're not good enough for or the right piece for what we're doing and what we need. So just boom, trading for Alex Caruso. You know, we've seen them waive so many first-round picks.
Yeah, you kind of mentioned that, like, Brad Stevens straight away, Marcus Smart for Kristaps Porzingis at the time. That seems weird. Like, it kind of just ties into, like, all, like, if you do have to be cutthroat. You can't just kind of GM with relationships. It's like, oh, we'll keep him around for another year, or we'll see, and kind of stick around, and maybe he'll develop. Like, no, if you know or see it then you got to fix it right then and there.
Well, that, and it's really tough to bring along a huge group of young players together, right? That's because players fall off, players fall behind. I guess there is a way in which you can have a big group of players that, like, start fighting together to move forward together. But it just so rarely happens where you see one after another, like, productive draft pick. And I think we can look at it, like, going back to when he built a team with Kevin Durant and then Russell Westbrook and James Harden, where it just, like, boom, 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 he created this atmosphere where, yeah, it's three top five picks, right? But he hit on all of them and was able to develop his staff was able to develop all three of them.
Yeah.
Where, you know, not everybody knew James Harden was going to be a flat out superstar. Russell Westbrook, like, you pretty much knew, like, coming out of college. Same, I'd say the same with KD.
Definitely KD.
Yeah, KD, I mean, I thought he should have been the first pick in that draft. And I thought that at the time, like, watching him as a college freshman dominate the game, lead the NCAA, and I think both scoring and rebounding as a freshman at Texas, was just like, man, why would you not draft him?
Yeah, why wouldn't you draft Michael Jordan either, Portland?
Yeah, yeah. The Greg Oden pick, I mean, that happens. Greg Oden should have been really good too.
Yeah, yeah.
But you knew that Kevin Durant was going to be something different. But watching Presti just continuously put these teams together, it's mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling where you have a team in Sacramento that has had these opportunities multiple times. They've gone all the way back to, you know, the basics multiple times. They've drafted in the top five or top eight multiple times, and they never have this type of not only success but what looks like sustainable success.
You've been here longer than anyone. Like, why? Why do you think that is? We've had GM after GM, just coaches, whatever. Like, just why haven't they been able to get on the right foot? And I guess 2023, the Beam Team season, they did, but I don't know if that was a fluke or they just kind of got complacent after that. Like, why, like, they haven't, why can't they take one, like, the step forward?
I think for me, like, the biggest issue that teams and franchises like the Kings have, and they're not the only ones to do this.
I mean, there's the Charlotte Hornets.
It's the instability. And I'd say even Charlotte has stuck with, you know, they've had moments where they stuck with James Borrego for a long time. They stuck with Steve Clifford for a long time. You look at Washington, Scotty Brooks got, like, a really long run there. It's the constant change that just is so detrimental to young players. And, you know, like, just Keegan Murray, for instance, right? You draft Keegan Murray, and again, you're changing not – sure, he had his coach get fired, like, midway through his third season – but look at how many different roles Keegan Murray's played throughout his first 3 years. And it's because there's no continuity of idea, mm-hmm. right? So when you're building a team, it should be like, hey, let's let Keegan Murray get comfortable in this position and let's just keep building and building and building. And that's not what they do. Instead, they, okay, we need you to be a small forward. Wait, we need you to bulk up and be a power forward. Wait, we need you to defend the best possible player on every single team every night. We need you to defend guards. There is no like one pathway forward where you can just see like, hey, I need to improve at this, this, and this, and so next season I can be a better player. Like Keegan Murray should have been the last 2 years working on like his off the dribble, mm-hmm. you know, his ability to handle the ball, to take the ball to the basket. And he has.
But it feels like also that's kind of been a backseat type of thing because of the role he's had to take on defense too, I feel.
Exactly. So instead of asking him to take on more of a scoring role and become more of the players that you thought he was going to be mm-hmm. when you took him with the fourth overall pick, you just keep changing what you need from him. And again, it's not in this situation. At least he had the same coach for 2.5 years, but go back to some of the other players that have been here, the De'Aaron Foxes of the world who, you know, started with Dave Yeager, but, you know, went to Luke Walton and Alvin Gentry and Mike Brown and Doug Christie, 5 coaches before he left.
Is Tyreek Evans kind of winning Rookie of the Year? Didn't they kind of switch him up position-wise after that too, or what was the situation there? Isn't that kind of similar?
Tyreek, I'm going to say it's a little bit different because the problem that you had with Tyreek was...
Just going on the theme of just no stability and just kind of reworking stuff.
Well, that's part of it, right? Like, I'll say this. The problem that... One of the bigger problems, my first 2 years covering the team was Tyreek's rookie season. I came in the next season. So he was coming off his rookie season, and I had DeMarcus Cousins as a rookie. That was my first 2010-2011 season. First of all, he didn't have a natural position at all. So you're wondering the whole time, like, what are we going to do with this kid? Like, is he a small forward? Is he a shooting guard? He's a shooting guard that can't shoot. Is he a point guard? His family, his brothers wanted him to play the point guard position the whole time. But again, you just kept trying different things to bring in pieces that you thought might work. So in what is second season, the next season, the Kings drafted Jimmer, thinking that Jimmer would be an answer, right? Because I saw the outline of what they were thinking. What they were thinking, Jeff Petrie at the time, he was trying to kind of recreate the Mike Bibby, Doug Christie backcourt and just missed. Yeah. Like, Jimmer just was not an NBA player. And then, of course, Isaiah Thomas was, but Isaiah Thomas wasn't the same type of player. And so now you had to disguise, you know, some of the defensive liabilities of Isaiah Thomas, but also, you know, like just the moxie and everything else was like spectacular. So like the dynamics of those teams just changed so much. And a lot of it was because they had the lowest payroll in the NBA. Like my first 2 seasons, they traded for players at the deadline to get to the floor that they had to be at. They had to get to $58 million. So 1 year they traded for Marquise Daniels and to get to the floor. One season, I believe they traded for Sam Cassell to get to the floor, who these guys never played for the Kings. Like, how many players the Kings traded for during my first 2 or 3 years that never played for the Kings? Like, people forget Larry Hughes was a King, never played for the
Cavaliers legend.
Yeah, he never even, I don't even think he ever came to Sacramento. Jason Terry was a King.
Yeah, the people don't like Jason Terry around here, huh?
Yeah, because when he got traded to the Kings, he asked to be bought out so he could go play for a contender, and the Kings did. And then he went on radio in Dallas and talked trash about Sacramento for no reason.
Just my only memory of Jason Terry is when he got dunked through the floor.
Just ungrateful. Yeah. But it feels like there are always these moments where you're on a pathway. And then you lose your pathway, and it's because, you know, whether it's like switching coaches or switching owners or switching general managers, like there's always some new pathway.
Okay, and I know we were tying this in with the Thunder and all that, but let's stick with the Kings. Do you think, like, what's their direction now then? Where do you see this going now?
We don't know yet.
No?
No, I think
because like I see Sabonis and LaVine, and I'm kind of like wondering, like, okay, like what's the direction you're going here?
Well, if I'm them, I feel the same way. Mm. I want to know what the direction is. And then not only do I want to know what the direction is, but it was fine. Monty and Wes had a direction as well. I want to know how you're going to actually
execute
the direction. And that's the problem that I think you're going to have convincing guys like Domas, convincing guys like Zach LaVine. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, this is who we're going to be. And it's like, okay, can you show me that first? And it's like, okay, that's where Scott Perry's got to step in and he's got to figure out how to make this happen. So I think with Domas specifically, it's more of don't tell me anymore. Just show me.
I got you.
Show me what you're going to do. Yeah. All right. This discussion definitely went a different direction than we had planned here in the first, 15 minutes of the show. But that's the way it goes sometimes. We're going to step aside when we come back. I think we'll continue this, but we're also going to talk about how Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Tyrese Haliburton are taking these like gigantic leaps as players and what it means for the NBA. We're the Insiders here on ESPN 1320, brought to you by Jiffy Lube. We'll be back in just a minute.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento's sports leader. Now, back to The Insiders, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Welcome back into The Insiders. James Hamm. Jesse Tapia is joining me today. Kyle Madsen is away. He's taking a week off and like seeing every concert known to man, having a good time out there.
He saw Stray Kids again last night, I believe.
Yeah, I think it's just he's just going to follow them.
Shout out Kyle Madsen. He's having the time of his life.
Yeah, he's just living the K-pop life.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very, very intriguing. Yeah. Oh, to be 34 again.
I'll get there in a few years.
Get there at some point. Yeah, Stray Kids, and then I think Kendrick Lamar tonight?
Maybe. I don't know. Yeah. Whatever. Actually, yeah, I think it is tonight.
Yeah, it is tonight at Oracle Park again. Oh. Was Stray Kids not at Oracle Park last night?
Yeah, because I saw his video yesterday. So
that was at Oracle Park, right? Yeah.
Maybe
yeah,
he just like hid out somewhere and just like slept there.
Yeah.
Make it into content. Hey, I spent the night at Oracle Park without getting caught.
Overnight challenge. Exactly. At Oracle Park.
That would be a good topic here on The Insiders.
Oh, yeah. I was like, yeah, found my way to the janitor's closet. Nobody saw and then just fell asleep in left field after that.
That's right.
Yeah.
Kyle is living the life right now. He's living
Kyle
the life.
Madsen.
So we're very happy for Kyle to get away. Will
in the chatty house says he's on his way to SF for Kendrick right now.
Oh, there we go.
Leezy's going out there too.
Shout
Keep
out.
Out for Leezy.
All right. A lot of people are going to see Kendrick Lamar.
You guys are both big concert guys?
I'm a huge concert guy. Yeah. Like I've seen so many concerts, it's crazy.
Yeah, same. No, yeah, I'm huge. Even before this job, like I had been going to concerts frequently. So it tied in perfectly. Yeah.
You're not going to catch me at a Stray Kids or a Kendrick Lamar concert.
No, you probably just stick to your bag and all that.
I've seen quite a few different bands, but also a lot of older stuff. Mm. Yeah. So a lot more low key than what Kyle is.
I got you. Kyle seems like he's on the floor right next to the stage, it seems.
Absolutely.
Like.
Yeah.
Although, I did go see like Timberlake at Golden One. That was
sounds
wild.
Like it'd be fun.
He was, I was wondering the whole time, like, was he wearing, like, a step counter? Because mm-hmm. I thought he'd probably taken, like, 30,000 steps, like, during the show.
Yeah.
He had, like, this really, really long stage that went all the way through the middle of the crowd, and he was up and down, like, the entire time. I thought, man, this is exhausting. Yeah, so I've seen him there. I saw Maroon 5 there at Golden One. I mean, I've been to, like, 12 shows, 21 Pilots. But then a whole bunch of older stuff.
I need to become more of a concert guy, maybe. Just kind of see.
I've already talked about this with James and Kyle, where I'm taking you guys to Aftershock this year.
Oh, no, brother. I'm not going to Aftershock.
Yeah.
No.
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not going to Aftershock.
I think Thursday night at Aftershock is supposed to be off the charts, right?
It's
going
to be insane.
Aftershock used to be cool, though, because I used to live right by Discovery Park, and you'd hear like the music and just... Like
oh yeah!
Just
oh yeah!
Apartment or whatever.
Most people.
Dope, yeah.
That's the cool thing about Aftershock is most of the people in the surrounding community are like for it.
Yeah, my dad has been trying to get me to go to Aftershock the last couple years, actually. He likes to go out there.
Yeah. Well, look at Drew Down. Here in the chat, he said, Joe Brazil strikes me as a Jonas Brothers guy.
There it is. And yeah, and thank you for John. He is a Jonas Brother. I'm Joe Jonas.
There you go, right there.
There you go.
And Aldrin J., I'm probably not going to a Janet Jackson concert unless my wife wants to go, because my wife is a big Janet Jackson fan and met Janet Jackson when she was young. So maybe we'll go to a Janet Jackson concert. All right, let's get back into this. We get detoured all the time on the show, which is, it's just part of the fun. We did have the game, the final score last night, the Thunder, you know, they win the series 4-1. It's 124-94. It wasn't even that close, to be honest with you.
Once the Thunder jumped out to that late in the beginning, like you said, like we were expecting the Timberwolves to, it was like, all right, we know this is over. The Timberwolves just aren't going to have it tonight.
No. They didn't have it from the opening tip, and you're mm-hmm. like, what in the world happened? Like, how could you not be ready for this moment? And, like, they might feel the same way that I do, that, like, hey, nobody's stopping the Thunder this mm-hmm. season. Shout-out to Chet, who had 22 points. Jalen Williams had 19. I think it's really crazy to see a young trio, because Shea had 40, but a young trio of players, like, show up like this in the playoffs and just – like, take the step that everybody's been waiting for.
And they took it kind of fast, wouldn't you think?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, Chet missed a year, but this all, like, last year they won 62 games, I believe, something around, or maybe 57, I think, because they were close with the Nuggets, I think. It was around there. Either way, you get the point. But you kind of expect teams like this to fail a little bit, and they've just already taken the next step, where it's like, everyone's just expecting them to kind of walk over the Pacers, too, if that's who they play in the finals.
Well, I think a lot of people, not exactly the way this happened, but I think a lot of people expected them to stumble a little bit here and there mm-hmm. in the same way that the Cavs did.
Yeah.
Because their trajectory is very similar to the Cavs. You know, the Cavs won a bunch of games last year and then won even more this year. I think that they won 64 or something like that.
Yeah, I think they might actually won 62 this year.
Yeah.
Might be the number I'll stuck on.
No, they won 64.
Oh, 64.
Yeah, Boston won 61. And OKC won 68. Those are your only 360 win teams. And to be honest with you, those are the only three teams in the NBA that won more than 52. Mm-hmm. So there's this huge gap between the top three teams and then who was next. But OKC, I kind of felt it like right away, like, oh no, this is not one of those teams that's going to have to take time to get better. Because they added the veterans that you kind of knew that they needed to add.
Because Caruso's not just some role player. He's been an all defensive team type guy and all that over his career. So
yeah, and he's so good defensively. And the crazy thing is that he didn't make first or second team because Lu Dort made first team. Jalen Williams. Yeah, Lu Dort made first team. Jalen mm-hmm. Williams made second team. So Caruso and Shea don't make all NBA defensive team because you can't have four of them on the squad. But realistically, they do. They have like four all NBA defenders, caliber defenders.
We're talking about the vet additions they made too. Like we mentioned, Sam Presti doesn't waste time. We saw last year they needed size, so you go and add Isaiah Hartenstein, and it's like boom, you got it right there. They're ready to go. Like there was no. We're gonna wait or see what it is here.
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing I'll say about that one too. Is it they overpaid Hartenstein by a ton, but it doesn't matter. First of all, they had the money to spend because they have kept their cap flexibility really well. You know, we talked about it the other day. For next season, they're at $172 million in dedicated salary, 13 players under contract. So Hartenstein's never going to get that $30 million contract again.
Yeah,
but that doesn't matter. He'll probably stick around and play the rest of his career there because he just made a whole bunch of money up front.
And he'll likely be a champion.
Yeah, and I started something early before we got going. Casey Tucker in the chat said, he said OKC is going to be a force for the next few years until they have to start paying luxury tax on their stars. Defensive system and personnel are dominant. The weird thing, they're not going to have problems because the salary cap it's almost like Sam Presti, like he built this team to succeed and then to be in the era where the salary cap jumps 10% every year because of the new television deal. So what they did is they chose instead of the players union and the owners, they negotiated this instead of having just 1 year where the salary cap jumps like $40 million bucks and a bunch of randos get all kinds of money, they decided to tier this thing so it goes up 10% every year. A smoothing of the cap is what they call it, yeah. Right? What that means is that, you know, it doesn't sound like that much, 10%, but when the salary cap's $155 million bucks, that means it goes up $15.5 million. And then the next year, it's going to go up, you know, because it'll be at 180, 170, it'll go up $17 million. So as your team is getting better and as they're growing, when you sign your players to contract extensions, it's usually the most you can give them is an 8% raise. So while they're getting 8% raises, the NBA salary cap is jumping 10%.
Yeah.
Right?
So we kind of planned this out, you're saying?
Yeah, it looks like he planned this out to when the television contract was going to hit, because we get a couple of years into this build and Harkenstein's big dollar money is going to fall off. You're going to have to pay Jalen Williams. You're going to have to pay Chet. But all of their role players are locked up on long-term reasonable deals, $8 million a year, $9 million, $10, $11. They're all reasonable deals. And when you're looking at percentage of the salary cap, like in 2 years, a $10 million contract is going to be like 5.5% of the salary cap. So you've managed this thing so incredibly well. I don't think they're going to run into a problem. They might have a player who steps up and is just way better than they thought, right?
Yeah, you can see Chet taking a jump or whoever.
Well, no, because you're already expecting Chet and you're already expecting Williams.
You're talking about one of the role players.
And you're talking about, and then you have Shea. The rest of them, they're going to be, you know, right around $10 to $15 million players from here on out.
Well, what do you think they'd pay Chet? Like, do you think they'd pay him like he gets a max, right?
He's close. He's okay. Close to max money.
Because I wonder, like, if they're looking to pay him maybe a little bit less than the max, is maybe he just hasn't jumped out to what he was expected to be as a number two pick, but someone else in the league is willing to pay him however much. Like, I wonder if that's a way you lose guys.
No, it's possible, yeah. But I don't think they're going to. So, because I think what's going to happen is the moment that Chet's contract kicks in, Harkenstein's going to drop.
I got you.
And again, Harkenstein's not getting that money again. He might be a guy who signs at 345. As opposed to the $30 million he's getting this year and last year, like that giant, well, this year and next year, those giant numbers. That's not going to continue, but they were able to do that because of where they were financially. Mm-hmm. They were able to just grossly overpay for like a middle-of-the-road role player, but a guy who fits their system perfectly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's really it's fun to watch a team that just like figured it out. I think they're going to be great for a long time. And it kind of brings us back to the discussion that we were aiming to have. It's that it's all predicated on Shea Gilgeous-Alexander becoming great. And to be honest with you, I don't know why it is that we overlook OKC as the spectacular great team that they are, and why we overlook Shea, because even like in our discussions about who's going to win the MVP, the discussion kept coming back to this point that, you know, again, Jokic is a 3-time MVP, should be a 4-time MVP, and he just posted a triple-double. He averaged a triple-double for the season. And it's like, well, Shea's going to win the MVP because he's, you know, the best player on the best team. He's leading the league in scoring. Jokic is still the better player, but Shea is, you know, he's going to win the MVP this year because everyone's kind of, they've got Jokic, you know, they're over it, right? Yeah. Like, there has to be a moment here where, like, as people who talk about sports on the radio or people who write about sports or talk about sports on social media, we have to acknowledge that Shea Gilgeous-Alexander is probably the best basketball player in the world right now.
You say that, but, like, do team situations matter, though? Because, like, if you were to flip Jokic and Shea and make the rosters work, then it's like Jokic is like, I don't know. I guess it's the context of it all, because I don't nearly disagree. If we want to call Shea the best player in the league right now, because he won MVP, average 30 a game and all that, team's about to win the finals. Like, I wouldn't even fight you, but I do get the other side where it's like, if you do want to argue, it's still Jokic. It's like, I mean, Jokic probably did as much as he could with not like Michael Porter Jr. looked like his shoulder was ready to fall off his arm and all that.
Okay, but we have to acknowledge the fact that they won 18 more games than Jokic's team.
Yeah.
In the regular season.
And I don't nearly disagree, but I do see like the other side where it's like, well, if we still hold on to Jokic.
Okay, so once we get past Shea, right? Their next best player is Jalen Williams at 21.6, which is, if I'm not mistaken, it's right around, almost spot on what Jamal Murray averaged, right?
Yeah.
Then we get past that, and the next leading scorer is Chet Holmgren at 15 points per game. So he's in the Aaron Gordon range, but not in the Michael Porter Jr. range, who averaged more. So, like, I don't know. Like, we can't say, like, if you put De'Aaron Fox on the Oklahoma City Thunder, they're not winning 68 games.
Yeah.
If you take Jaylen Brown and put him on the Oklahoma City Thunder, they're not winning 68 games. Jason Tatum, not going to happen. Like, Luka, not going to happen. I don't think.
But you're saying if Tatum and, like, Luka are on this Thunder team and play some SGA, yep, they're not winning 68?
Yep.
James, I don't know. Like, I thought I was going to agree with you going into it before the show, but it's like, a guy like Jokic is an all-time great, could, when it's all said and done, be like one of the 10 greatest players of all time. And it's like,
I agree.
We're willing to call Shea better than him right now?
Shea's averaged over 30 a game 3 years in a row. He's one of the most consistent scorers we've ever seen in the NBA.
Yeah.
What did he scored 31 points last season, not this season, but last season. I think it was 31 on the dot. It was something like 39 times. It's just like astronomical how consistent he is. And we can not like the foul grifting. I hate to tell you, but James Harden, Luka Doncic, Trae Young, LeBron James, they're all foul grifters.
I got you. I'm pulling up Jokic's numbers right now. I mean, Jokic has been 24 plus, I don't want to cheat anyone, since the 2020-21 season. Like, he's been doing it consistently as well. It's just, I mean, I can't. Your logic is right, and I completely understand. I get the fight that you're trying to go for, but I can't. I don't know. I can't say that SGA is just better. Like, he's one of the three best players in the league. I can give you that.
Okay, so I'm gonna say this. Like Polo L here in the chat, he says the Thunder win 45 games without Shea.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna disagree. I think they win 38 games without Shea. Look at the team. Like, again, we can say, like, oh man, they're really coming into their own in the playoffs, and Chet's averaging like 18 a game in the playoffs. But
you wouldn't have them better than this past year's Kings team, who won 40.
Take him off the roster.
Oh yeah, I got you. It's still, you don't think Jalen Williams can maybe get you 23, 22 a game or 24 a game or
the
whatever?
The only way it would work is if Jalen Williams averaged 35 a game and they found somebody else to average another 5 points a game. I don't see, like, again, look at, you're not getting more than 10 points a game out of Isaiah Joe. You're not getting more than 12 points a game out of Aaron Wiggins. You're not getting more than 11 out of Hartenstein, 10 out of Dort. Maybe you get 12 points out of Dort. Like, this, the team, the depth of this team is so predicated on the greatness of Shea. That's where I'm at, man.
I got you. Like I said, your argument makes complete sense, but
this is a group of randos. Like, I'm not saying that it's...
Wait, who's a group of randos? The Thunder?
The Thunder.
No, I can't. You can't do that. Lou Dort has been, like, he's a great defender who's been, like, just, like, an all-defensive type defender, like, for a few years. Like, that's not randos. Like, those are guys who, like, all-defensive teams. That's not randos.
Okay.
Isaiah Joe's a rando, but not, like, Caruso or any of those other guys.
But the rest of them, Caruso, so people know, Caruso averaged 7 points a game this season.
That's fine, but I guess you can't be an all-defensive type player over your career and be like, yeah, he's a rando, like...
Kasem Wallace in the rotation.
Second-year player, but it looks like he kind of could be something, right?
Averaged 8.4 points per game.
I'm
telling you this.
You are indirectly disrespecting this Thunder team to prop up Shea, and I won't let you do it.
No, this system works because Shea's there. I we can keep going. You know,
we can go back and forth, whatever. This is radio, too, so we don't have to make sense as well. Like, this is sports, whatever.
Let's fight about this after the break.
I got you.
We're going to continue this because I think we can add in the Tyrese Haliburton discussion as well into this and kind of grow it from there. So we're the Insiders here on ESPN 1320, brought to you by Jiffy Lube. We'll be back in just a minute.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento's sports leader. Now, back to The Insiders, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Welcome back into the Insiders. I'm James Hamm. Joining me, Jesse Tapia. And we've got Joe Brazil behind the glass. We're, of course, brought to you by Jiffy Lube. And we're in an epic debate over the value of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
Yeah, you call the OKC guys randos, and I think that's Denver, if we're being real here.
Denver has... I don't
Brother, think... they got the corpse of Russell Westbrook. All right, okay. Sorry, Dame. I'm sorry, but...
Yeah.
Okay. Michael Porter's Jr. Michael Porter Jr., who's got a shoulder like a bunch of ribs ready to fall off the bone.
But he's not a rando. He's a guy who's not a rando, averaged like 18 to 20 a game for 5 years.
Julian Strother, rookie, but like he just stepped up.
Yeah. Okay. So they do have some randos at the end of the bench because they got depleted.
Yeah.
For sure.
Guys who had to get minutes, though.
Okay.
Christian Braun, like, he's more of a rando than Alex Caruso would be. I don't want to disrespect Christian Braun, but, like...
I'm not saying Alex Caruso. Alex Caruso's not a rando, but Isaiah Joe, Aaron Wiggins, Cason Wallace, like, these guys are. They are randos.
That's fine. Those guys can be randos. That's fine. But also, I don't think this team is only winning 38 games either if you take SGA off. Like, I think given how everyone plays defensively, like, you'll get... They're not winning 68 games, no doubt. They're probably not even winning 55 or whatever, but I think they'd win 40-plus still.
Every team in the league, they focus all of their attention to slow down SGA. If that doesn't happen, what do you think Jalen Williams is going to face?
Well, it's like on the Indiana Pacers, though, kind of, let's just bring them all in here. Like, sometimes, like, Tyrese Haliburton isn't going for 30 a game, but they have a system that works as everyone kind of does their job. I feel like that's kind of the system that the Thunder could run if you take SJ off there. It's not going to be some guys going for 30 that night every night, but hey, maybe Chet gave you 25 or 27. Maybe J-Dub gave you 25 or 27 this night and stuff like that. Caruso had a decent shooting night or whatever, you know? Like just things like that where you kind of lean on that more so. SGA, we need 35 from you today.
Okay, so my rebuttal would be that Shai averaged 6.4 assists per game. Jalen Williams, 5.1. No one else on the team more than 3.8 assists. Who's even passing the ball in that system?
Alex Caruso, you're running point. Like, I don't know, James. Like, it's not going to be that bad is my point. They're not winning 38 games.
They're going
like,
to be...
I can't give you the stats for every player and stuff like that, but I do think you have a good enough squad where it's like, yeah, you could get good... you could get wins out of here.
I don't know.
And again, maybe you're a play-in team and you're playing the Lakers in the 7-8 matchup or something like that, but... I don't think it'd be 38.
Alex Caruso's career high in assists per game was 4.
Like I said,
he's not a natural point guard.
If you don't have an SGA, Sam Presti is going to look and like you're not finding an SGA caliber player, but you're going to find a point guard or whatever, someone to fill that role and kind of like it's not just take SGA and you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get it, but now you're changing things.
Hey, this is radio, whatever. I'm trying to make sure I win this argument, I guess.
I don't think you're going to win it. I'd also say this. We're watching like Shai take the leap.
Yeah.
But also we're watching Haliburton take the leap.
Yep.
And again, Halliburton's style of play is so unique that so much of what they do is predicated on his passing versus Shai's like shooting. But I think we're getting really close to the like yesterday sort of our discussion was like Haliburton is a superstar.
Yeah.
We have to acknowledge that now that he's reached the point where when you start putting up 30, 15, and 14 in the playoffs, in the Eastern Conference Finals, you're probably a superstar, right? And I think it's funny because if we shift the conversation to face of the league, I think Haliburton has a better chance of being the face of the NBA than Shai, and it's strictly because of his personality.
Yeah, Tyrese is way more animated, and that's not like a problem with Shai. He just isn't, but Tyrese was doing the choke sign against the Knicks and all that, even though they hadn't won at the time, and he's just kind of, he's just out there. I feel like the people love Tyrese too, whether it's like on social media or just analysts watching the game. Like everyone just loves Tyrese Haliburton, so you're always going to prop that up more when he does that, has his antics and all that stuff, because it doesn't really bother me. People get frustrated by Tyrese because he'll talk trash when they're up or whatever. But to me, it's just personality. It's just who he is on the court. And like that stuff doesn't bother me at all.
No, it doesn't bother me either. Like the one thing you know, and covering him too, like when things went bad,
yeah,
he wore it. Like you wear the hoodie. Like there were a couple of press conferences where he wore a hoodie like pulled over his face. Mm-hmm. And I remember there was a night where the Kings lost by like, it was something bad at home. It was like 33 at home to Atlanta or something. Well, no, maybe it wasn't the Atlanta game. Maybe he referenced the Atlanta game. And somebody asked him, hey, is this like the lowest point? And he goes, what are you talking about, the lowest point? He's like, no, we lost by like 45 last year at home. He's like, that was the lowest point. Like, this is not a good point,
yeah.
And it's a low point, but no, it's gotten worse. It's been worse, so no. And so I've seen, like, the dark side of him because, like, he loves to win, and he hates to lose, and you see it, like, so dramatically on his face and the way that he acts, and I think that that's, you know, reason why people either love or hate him.
Yeah.
Like the antics, I'm not a WWE guy, but like the antics of him and like...
Well, like B. Perry in the chat house right here brings it up right here. He brings the WWE show to his games. Like you said, it's just the antics and the entertainment. Leezy also says he embraces the moment and the entertainment. He's just... He's aware of the show too, I think. Like it's not just a basketball game, you know? Like where these guys... Like Kyrie Irving just wants to play basketball. Jokic just wants to play basketball. Like Tyrese... wants to play basketball as well, but he's aware of everything else that goes on with it. I think he plays into it a bit, which is a fun thing.
I think so too. And, you know, a little bit of the Jason Williams thing, right? Mm-hmm. Where Jason Williams was like the ultimate showman.
Yeah.
Like he did so many stupid things on the court, but it didn't matter because when it was right, when he hit it, you're like, oh man, that was like one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. Now, how many times I watched him pull up off the dribble with 22 seconds on the shot clock from like 26 feet in an NBA that did not like that? He was so far above, like before the curve with the like ridiculously bad shots. And his didn't go in like Steph. Like, yeah. You know, there were plenty of misses, but there's a certain showmanship quality to him. And again, I think there's a certain workmanlike quality to Shea that, like, it's never going to garner the same type of, like, I don't know. Even, like, James Harden has a certain flair to him, right? Shea just hasn't bought into that, you know?
It's, like, Harden's got, like, even just, like, he's got the beard, like, just things that people can kind of gravitate to and stuff like that. Like, not that the beard is, like, a thing, but it's just kind of, like, his little branding thing or whatever. Like, Shea doesn't have, like, a brand I think he's kind of latched onto yet where it's, like, his thing, you know?
Well, remember James Harden had the shimmy, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, like there are certain things that Shea just doesn't.
Yeah, like, it's just like there's just no brand to Shea, I feel.
Yeah, his brand is to go out there and just beat you.
Yeah.
And to win the game. And to me, there's a lot of respect needs to go into that. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit more LeBron James-esque because LeBron doesn't, like, the antics aren't there. The pregame, like, that stuff and, you know, the crazy dunks and stuff, but. It kind of feels like Shea, like personality-wise, like more subdued and everything else.
So. Yeah, LeBron's got that little step celebration he does too now. It was more of a Miami thing, I think. We don't see it too much now, but...
Yeah, he did spend a lot of time in South Beach.
Yeah, he's a little funny too when he comes up injured or whatever. He might stay on the floor for a few minutes.
I'd also say, like, he's in his 40s.
Yeah.
Like, it does take a while to get off the floor at that point.
It's a good point. LeBron is, 40 years old.
Yeah. And he's had plenty of time to kind of look at it and you know, figure it all out.
Shout out LeBron.
I just think it's an interesting conversation. Like, we've been sitting here waiting for the next generation of NBA players to step into the spotlight, and they are. And I think a lot of people are just missing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the next generation is Tyrese Haliburton, it's Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, it's Jalen Brunson, and it's Anthony Edwards. And I think Anthony Edwards and Jalen Brunson, like, they faded pretty hard. I think Brunson is at least been, like, relatively consistent. He's been picked on defensively.
They just ran into a bigger star, if anything.
Yeah.
Like, it's not... Like, Brunson's been fine or whatever, but it's just the Pacers have just been better and taking the moment more than that series.
Yeah, I would agree.
And then Anthony Edwards just ran into a buzzsaw. I'm sorry. Like, they had no shot in this series.
Yeah, and I also think that Anthony Edwards, he's only 23 still. Mm-hmm. I just don't think he has taken... I mean, he's got his team to the Western Conference Finals 2 years in a row, so you can't say that he's not doing his job. But he also doesn't have the right players around him to fully take that next step.
And I wonder what direction the Timberwolves went ahead, because, like, you got to the Western Conference Finals last year, and we all know, like, you traded a better player in Karl Anthony Towns to the Knicks for, like, I'm not going to call him a lesser player, and Randall, but probably a tier below.
Yeah,
a tier below and Randall, and it's kind of like, all right, what are you trying to win titles here? Are you trying to save money or give me the aprons or whatever? Like, just kind of, what is your plan here?
Yeah, I think it's one of the more... like that team specifically, you don't know where they're headed, you know, because this is a pretty disappointing way for their season to end. And I guess you can hope for organic growth from guys like Anthony Edwards to take another step and be like a 30, 32 point per game guy. You think that like McDaniels can take another step as a player, but they also have, you know, like major decisions. You know, we talked about it yesterday, Julius Randle has a $30 million player option, and he might think he can go get more money somewhere else.
Well, that, and you got guys like Rudy Gobert who are just like, you're here, but like, brother, we can't even play you in the playoffs right now.
Dude, I don't even want to. I went in and looked at the Gobert. He is such a bust as a playoff player.
Yeah. He's like, unplayable in the playoffs. We see it every year. Come playoff time, like, it's great. Regular season, whatever. Come playoff time, he go grab some bench.
Yeah.
This is every time, every year, whether it be the Jazz or this team now.
He had the one game where against the Lakers, who have no center, where he put up 27 and 24. In the other 14 games, he averaged 6.7 points and 7.5 rebounds per game. He's the weakest link on that team, and it's not even close.
Yeah. They gave Tyrese the most overrated player moniker or whatever from the Athletic vote and all that. That's Rudy Gobert.
It is Gobert.
Yeah, easily.
Yeah, yeah, very crazy. All right, we're going to step aside. When we come back, we got a little bit of DeMar DeRozan spoke on a podcast. We'll continue some of this discussion and how it kind of plays into where the Kings are and how do they find their guiding star. And that's going to be probably the biggest challenge for Scott Perry moving forward. We're the insiders here on ESPN 1320. James Hamm, Jess Tapia, Joe Brazil over there. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube. See you in just a minute.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento sports leader.